Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Happy Sunday to you. As the holiday weekend rolls on, it's been a four-day holiday weekend. A lot of people even took Wednesday off. It's been a good, solid few days.
Yeah, I mean, we were through it, though. Radio doesn't sleep.
I had the fourth off, and that was it. I've worked every other day since last Friday, like 9-10 straight days, something like that. I don't know. Whatever. It's all good. I like working. It's fun doing radio.
Radio's fun.
It's work, but it's fun. This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. And across the Midwest, you can listen worldwide by getting the app at 810WHB.com. It is Sunday, July 7th, 2019. I got the year right this time. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. USA Women in the World Cup Final just underway against the Netherlands. We will keep you updated throughout the show. We cannot do live play-by-play, so if a goal happens, we will wait, like Josh Briscoe and I did earlier this week on the radio. We will wait the appropriate amount of time, I don't know, 20 seconds or so, and then we will give you an update. So I was looking up, because we have baseball tonight coming up at 11:30, and I was looking for milestones, which is one of our segments. And Chris, I found this one, and this has a Kansas City tie. So let me just read it to you. On this date, July 7th, 1948. The Cleveland Indians signed 42-year-old Negro Leagues legend Satchel Paige to a contract, making him the oldest rookie in Major League history. Although many dismissed the move as a publicity stunt, Paige silences the critics, and I'm reading from MLB.com. Paige silences the critics by going 6-1 with a 2.48 ERA. He was elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 1971. It's not bad. 42-year-old rookie going 6-1 with a 2.48 ERA.
That's not too shabby.
No, not at all. And I'm sure Bob Kendrick, our good friend, president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, will have that noted today. And Bob always makes a distinction, and Buck O'Neill made this distinction. The Negro Leagues Museum is not a Hall of Fame. It's a museum. There's one National Baseball Hall of Fame. And Buck and Bob and everybody who's worked there over the years at the Negro Leagues Museum fought so hard to get so many Negro Leagues players into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. That's why they don't want you to call the museum a Hall of Fame. The Hall of Famers are in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. This is a museum.
Well, it's sad that Buck O'Neill is not probably going to get in, which is a sad travesty, in my opinion, because of how much he did for the game.
That's the thing. So they have an award named the Buck O'Neill Award, and it's only awarded like every couple of years, maybe every 3 or 4 years. The Hall of Fame is not just about players. It's about people who impacted the game. There's media. Jason Stark is going into the Hall of Fame, the Ford C. Frick Award winner for media members. It's about people who had an influence on the game. And considering what Buck O'Neill did, not only during his life playing in the Negro Leagues, and then coaching in the major leagues for the Cubs, scouting for the Royals, and all the work he did to promote
the community as well.
And the community, and all the work to promote the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and to fight for his guys to get into the National Baseball Hall of Fame, that deserves a spot. I'm sorry. I didn't think I was going to give a lecture on that this morning, but when I read that note on MLB.com, got to thinking about it. Satchel Paige. I was always fascinated with Satchel Paige when I was a kid. I obviously never got to see him play, but he lived here in Kansas City. He's buried here in Kansas City. And I would read books and stories and newspaper accounts about just what kind of player he was and pitching doubleheaders. And
he has so much flash, too.
That's the thing. The Negro Leagues Baseball Museum gives out the awards they call Hall of Game. And you got to have swagger and panache to your game. And that was definitely part of Satchel Paige's game. He wasn't there just to pitch. He was there to put on a show. You were getting your money's worth if you got to see Satchel Paige pitch. So anyway, like I said, didn't know I was going there, but I just read that historical note. Royals baseball this afternoon, 12:35 p.m. first pitch, taking on the Nationals, final game of this series before the All-Star break. Yesterday went
as expected.
Yes, we were doing the show yesterday, Sports Saturday, and Chris and I and David Leske were talking about what we expected from Max Scherzer. David Leske was a little ambitious. He put the over-under on strikeouts for Scherzer at 13.5.
A little ambitious.
I put it at 11.5. Easy for me to say. And he finished with 11. So we kind of nailed that, right?
I think I said he had 12 strikeouts yesterday.
Yeah.
Glenn Sparkman, he got six, and that's what you expected. He got you six with right. four runs given up. Okay, right. You'll take that from him.
From him, yes.
Since he's a backline
against
starter,
Scherzer.
I don't even think he's a starting pitcher, in my opinion. But when you're going up, you have to be nearly perfect.
Yes.
Against a guy like Max Scherzer, who was just dealing yesterday. Royals hitters just looked like they were so bamboozled by the fact that he was pitching and were swinging at balls that weren't even starting in the zone.
No.
They had no clue what was coming. And with his
and
fastball,
it looked like it.
Yeah, with his fastball and the slider he was working yesterday, it was not good. But Alex Gordon, I was talking about this in baseball.
I saw the
tonight,
numbers
yesterday.
Yeah.
He was hitting like over .330 against Max Scherzer in his career, and he went I think 2-for-3 yesterday or 2-for-4. He hit it. I was like, that was the one guy who was like, all right, this is if you're banking on one player to actually make contact and get some hits against Max Scherzer, it's going to be Alex Gordon.
And I was reading. I think he's tied with Nick Markakis for the most hits against Max Scherzer in a career. And he was asked after the game about it, and he's like, I don't know. I'm a little more focused because I know how good he is. But, yeah, he has an excellent track record. And I know David Leske mentioned yesterday that he thought Jorge Soler might have a chance because Scherzer likes to challenge hitters with fastballs. Soler had one swing on a strikeout yesterday that I don't even know if he was trying to swing or he just kind of, like, waved his bat. It was like at 1 mile per hour.
Dude had one of those as well yesterday. It was
yes!
a check swing. And the swing path wasn't even close to where the ball was. He swung out in the middle of the plate. The ball was diving to his back foot.
Right.
It was so funny.
And look, if you're trying to hit against Scherzer, you can't be embarrassed about it because he's the best pitcher in the game, and he has been for a while. But
he's
it was
one of the
silly.
Best, yes. And his June speaks for itself, as we talked about yesterday. But it was just like you kind of knew what was going to happen going into that matchup.
Yes, you concede the match, right? It's like,
and it, I was just sitting there and I was
funny.
Just laughing. I was like, it's not that I didn't expect that would happen,
right?
But just of how bad some of the approaches looked at the plate
yes.
yesterday.
Yes,
it was hard to hold back laughter.
Yes, that was a game. If you're a Royals hitter, that's a game where you take the video and the numbers and throw them in the trash because there was nothing you were going to do about it, and there's nothing you can do about it now.
Yeah, this is no. This is like we're not bagging on anyone.
No,
this, you're going up against the best pitcher in the league right now.
Yes,
AL or NL.
Yes,
and that's going to happen. If he's on, he's on, and
there's nothing you can do about it. He does this to other teams routinely.
He's averaging, I think, in his last four starts, 11 strikeouts per game or something of that nature. So it's going to happen.
You just you take your lumps, tip your cap, Max Scherzer, walk out with some dignity. But then you turn – well, one more thing on the game. The uniforms, phenomenal.
The Expos were
phenomenal.
We're awesome.
Awesome. I don't know if they're auctioning those off for charity or anything like that. I can't afford it anyway, but that would be something I would consider laying out cash for. The hat. Give me the hat. Give me the helmet. Give me the pants. Give me the stirrups. Give me the socks. Whatever you got. And the Royals throwbacks were awesome, too. They were a throwback to 1969 because the Royals and Expos came into Major League Baseball in the same season. So the Royals were in their 1969 road grays with that dark blue script writing Kansas City. Awesome. If you didn't see it, just look at it. Just search Lou Piniella Royals. You'll find it.
Yeah, I was kind of, I'm kind of, after seeing what the Expos, or not the Expos, but the Nationals did with the throwback Expos uniforms, mm-hmm. with the powder blue on powder blue, I'm kind of disappointed that Kansas City doesn't go, when they do their alternates, that they don't go powder blue, powder blue.
Yeah.
Because those are classic. Like, those are, when you think of 70s and 80s
yes.
Royals baseball, you think of George Brett,
yep.
Frank White, and the powder blue.
Powder blues, yep.
Or Brett Saberhagen, or whoever. Go down the list of names.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the powder blue with white pants. Just go all in. Don't half-ass it.
Do it all.
If you, I bet you could make some serious cash if the Royals have a throwback night and wear their powder blues at home. All powder blue, top to bottom. That would be awesome. Yeah, 70s, 80s, Cardinals had powder blues. Expos had powder blues. I think the Orioles had powder blue. Phillies had powder blue. Rangers, I believe, had powder blue. There's probably somebody I'm missing. Seattle used to have a powder, kind of a powder blue.
It was kind of like a weird green, like,
yeah.
It was like not a
aquamarine
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't quite a powder blue, but I get your point. I mean, I just wish that they, when they do, like, when I want an alternate uniform, like, I want it to be old school. Like,
yes.
When Chiefs did against the Rams, when it was all white,
uh-huh.
I love an all-white fit.
That was great.
In football. Is
I think
of
Marcus Allen, yeah.
It is the best uniform, in my opinion. But
yeah.
I could be wrong. Some people might disagree. But I wish I also wish the Rams would just go all in on their classic.
Yes, absolutely.
Lighter blue,
the white,
the yellow.
With the white horns.
No, I don't like the white horns.
You don't?
I like okay. the yellow, because it looks weird when you have like a white horns and then you have offset colors.
Okay.
Like I like all the color coordination.
Yes, good stuff. Bravo, Washington, for finally doing it after what they moved in 2004?
Yeah, it was early 2000s. And Vlad Guerrero threw out the first pitch.
That was
yesterday.
Awesome, too. Him and his son have very different body types, by the way. Vlad was always... He was slender but muscular. I mean, he was rocked.
Yeah, Vlad.
He was rocked. But his son is...
He's carrying a little extra weight.
He's got some baggage. I was trying to think of the right word. He carries around a little extra.
Absolutely.
He's a little Prince Fielder-ish.
Oh, yeah.
There's a name I haven't heard in a while. Prince
I remember
Fielder.
When Prince Fielder hit
since
a inside the park home run, and I think it was against in the Twins' old stadium.
Really?
He hit one off the catwalk.
Okay.
And it was like, and it was weird, and it came down in a random spot, and he had an inside the park home run. It was crazy.
The worst one, the two worst stadiums I ever went to when I traveled with the Royals was the old Metrodome and then the Tropicana Dome for Tampa. Just awful. Just abysmal places to watch baseball. Maybe Tampa won't be there much longer. I don't know. They're certainly not going to build
split
a new
time.
Stadium. Yeah, whatever. So today, Royals and Nationals at 12:30. Well, baseball tonight at 11:30. Jacob Junis, and if you think it's easier today, no. You get Patrick Corbin. Oh, my God. Patrick Corbin. So this is, here's the case why we don't factor wins and losses in voting for Cy Young or Hall of Fame. That's going to go away. Patrick Corbin is 7-5. You look at 7-5 and you think, that's a pretty average season. No. 3.55 ERA, a whip of 1.41, 118 strikeouts to 33 walks. 118 to 33.
It says his whip here is 1.138. Okay. Or did you say 1.148?
I said, 1.14. I think I said 1.41.
Okay, I think it's 1.138.
Okay.
Because I was like, that sounded a little high because he's pitching phenomenal. He's having a really good season.
The only thing you could look at to where the Royals might be able to get some runs on the board is he has given up 13 home runs. On the other side, Jacob Junis has given up 18 home runs. Jacob Junis, 4-8, 5.53, whip of 1. I was reading the wrong whip.
That was more Jacob
I was
Junis
reading
whip.
Junis, I was reading Junis's whip instead of... Corbin. So Junis has 92 strikeouts, 36 walks, but he's given up 18 home runs. Look, I'm expecting a Royals loss. That's been the MO this season. Winning one out of three is kind of standard. They got their win on Friday in extra innings, 11 innings. blew the lead in the top of the in the bottom of the ninth, won it in extra innings. I'm not expecting much today. I'm really not. It's fine.
This is a much needed break for this team.
This all-star
kind
break.
Of reset.
Yes.
And hopefully there might be some new faces here after the trade deadline.
Yep.
You'll start to see, you know, I can't remember what date when they expand the rosters. You'll see some more.
September.
Yeah, September. So hopefully it gets a little better. Maybe some they make some trades by the deadline. Maybe an opener comes about at some point.
They were able to offload Lucas Duda last year. Why they brought him back, I don't
who
know,
knows?
But that's whatever. By the way, if you think things are bad in Kansas City, you're right, because they are for the Royals. At least you know Ned Yost and Dayton Moore have a track record, and that's why I bring this story up. So I was reading this morning. Mets lost to the Phillies last night 7-2. That sounds like a blowout. It wasn't. The Mets bullpen gave up 5 runs in the ninth inning. 5. We know about bad bullpens here in Kansas City because we have one. The Mets are equally as bad, if not worse. And things are not going. You don't hear about discord between Ned Yost and Dayton Moore. Ever. If there was, we wouldn't know about it because they wouldn't talk about it. Here's the story out of the Mets last night. So after the game, after the bullpen blows it, gives up 5 runs, and they lose, general manager, I'll give you $5, Chris, if you can tell me who the GM of the New York Mets is. God, I hope you're not a Mets fan.
I feel like I've heard his name before, but I can't.
I didn't know.
Remember.
No clue. Brody Van Wagenen.
Brody Van Wagenen. All right.
Sounds like the teenager down the street. Hey, Brody, you come down and be the GM of the Mets? So Brody Van Wagenen, he storms down to the clubhouse. He's going to have it out. I've had enough. He gets into a heated argument with Mickey Callaway, the manager, and the coaching staff. Just unloads on him for the blown save, blown loss. Giving up 5. Just unloads on him. Got so heated, he threw a chair. That's how things are for the Mets. You think Dayton Moore's going to come down and throw a chair? No. I mean, things happen. I remember the movie Moneyball. Billy Bean storms in the clubhouse and he knocks over the cooler. He takes a bat to the stereo and yells at Jeremy Giambi. That might have been played up for the movie. I don't know if that actually happened. Dayton Moore's not going to go throw chairs, but in the Mets clubhouse, they're winging chairs around down there. Coaching staff, the manager, they've already fired the pitching coach Dave Island and the bullpen coach. Who are they going to fire next? They're going to fire the manager at some point. So throwing a chair, and then on his way out, looks at Mickey Callaway, the manager of the Mets, and says, go do your blanking press conference. So things are going well. Mickey Callaway was asked about his relationship with the GM, and Mickey Callaway can be pretty deadpan at times if you've seen him after games because they're so awful. He said, yeah, my relationship with Van Wagenen is fantastic. You know how many blown saves the Mets have? If you think the Royals' bullpen is bad, which it is, the Mets actually lead the major leagues in blown saves. 21.
That's good. That seems pretty good. Yeah. Seems about right.
Well, it's nice to be able, as a Royals fan or covering the Royals, it's nice to be able to look at another team who's not having a good season and see how much worse it could be. Dayton Moore and Ned Yost aren't throwing chairs around. Remember Ned Yost years ago was asked about the team was going through a really bad stretch. And you're like, what can you do? Reporters were asking him, what can you do? Which is our job. You know, because we've all heard the stories before. The manager comes in the clubhouse and he turns over the postgame spread. Food goes everywhere. You guys ain't eating tonight. Gets it, lights into the whole clubhouse. And Ned Yost goes, what do you want me to do? Are we going to go out and score 8 runs on 16 hits tomorrow and pitch a shutout because I knocked over the postgame spread? Because I started screaming at guys? Sometimes that has to happen. It does. Closed-door meetings, players-only meetings, those things have to happen sometimes. But at least we know our general manager here in Kansas City is not walking into the coach's office and throwing chairs around. That solves nothing. And by the way, if you're Brody Van Wagenen, whoever you are, you put this roster together. You hired the manager. That's on you. If the players suck, you signed them. That's on you, just like the Royals. This is on Dayton Moore. What is Ned Yost supposed to do with the collection of guys he has right now? I mean, yes, managers can do little things here and there, but for the most part, it's on the player. The day-to-day game, it's on the players to get it done. Can you leave a starter in too long? Yes. Can you pull the wrong lever in the bullpen? Yes. But for the most part, it's on the players.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said before, you play the cards you're dealt, and Yost can only do so much. I think in baseball, if you're a manager, it's probably the toughest.
You have the least influence in any sport.
Yeah,
it's the outcome of a game.
It's the toughest to judge how good a manager is, in my opinion.
Right.
Because you're just putting pieces. You're just saying, all right, this is the matchup we have. We're going to put this lefty against this lefty, and it's just you can't do anything after that.
Right.
Like if you're going to the bullpen or whatnot. And with the Royals having a bad bullpen and not a great, you know, pitching staff, what can you do as a coach
right.
or a manager? You can't do anything about it.
Well, Ned Yost lost a ton of games when he got to Kansas City. Why? Because the roster wasn't very good. He also won two American League championships and a World Series. So you're right, trying to judge a manager, it's a hard thing to do. Now, I can tell you, Tony Muser was not a good manager. Trey Hillman was not a good manager. Tony Pena was not a good manager. And some of those guys had some awful teams too, but they were just not cut out to be managers. Ned Yost is clearly cut out to be a manager. But this team, yeah, I mean, once the game starts, there's very little the manager has influence on. A couple of changes here and there, and that's about it. Your guys are going to get their 4 and 5 at-bats.
I mean, why is Lucas due to getting at-bats? That's a question
that
I'd like to ask.
That is a question.
Because there are certain things in terms of why guys are getting certain days off and why
right.
or why do how he gives guys days off and then maybe not DHing certain guys while giving them the day off in the field. That there are certain like intricacies like that that sometimes I don't understand, or why Lucas Duda is getting at-bats instead of Ryan O'Hearn, who, yes, Ryan O'Hearn wasn't great up here at the plate, but it wasn't any worse than what Lucas Duda is doing at the plate, and he has a better glove at first base than like a Cuthbert.
Yeah, well, if a young guy is struggling, a rookie is struggling, the veteran's going to get the nod every time. That's the way baseball has been. But Lucas Duda is a discussion I could have for 20 minutes. I don't know why he was signed back in the first place. I don't know why he's here now, but whatever. We are coming up on a timeout here. Remember, we have baseball tonight. We can talk about it all again at 11:30. Royals and Nationals, first pitch at 12:30. Update on the Women's World Cup in Paris. USA and the Netherlands scoreless through 25 minutes. So no explosives yet, but we will keep you updated if something happens. Coming up next, we'll talk about something that's been fun. The NBA. Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, on and on and on and on. Also some new news out of Oklahoma City surrounding Russell Westbrook. We'll do that with Jared Sutton because he's the expert. He's an NBA scout, former Mizzou basketball star, pride of Oak Park High School, analyst for the SEC Network. So Jared will give us all the inside, the lowdown, and what we should all take away from everything that's happened in the NBA over the last few days. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City on this July 7th, 2019. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. Update from the Women's World Cup. USA just had an outstanding chance on a corner kick rebound in front. Julie Ertz fired a rocket shot. The Netherlands goalkeeper came up with it in traffic. And the USA goalkeeper, Nair, I don't know exactly how to pronounce her name, Nair, she just had a moment where she came about 10 to 15 yards outside the box, and it was a dicey situation, but she was able to block the ball. Wow, that's nerve-wracking. But it's scoreless right now, 30 minutes into the match. We'll keep you updated throughout the show. Right now, we are happy to be joined by Jarrett Sutton, former Mizzou basketball star, pride of Oak Park High School, NBA scout, and analyst for the SEC Network. Jarrett, are you taking in some Women's World Cup this morning?
I am. I made it back to Liberty this morning and watched it with my family up north. So it's been an exciting first few minutes.
Fantastic. Knowing you, I kind of had a suspicion that you might be going down to Power and Light to hang out with Nate Bucati and Alec Trost, but you know, you want to be able to watch the game.
Yeah, I was down there for the last two games.
Oh, wow.
I live in that Power and Light area, and looked like a blast, but our family's a big soccer fan, so we had a little family watch party this morning.
Oh, fantastic. We're watching it here in the studio, so we'll try to keep you. We hope you don't miss anything. We'll keep you updated, Jarrett.
It's like perfect timing, right? It's right before the half, so I'll at least get to see the second half.
So we want to talk a little NBA, since you're an NBA scout, and just kind of set the scene for me. The announcement comes out Saturday morning, I think 2 a.m., the Woj bomb came out. Kawhi Leonard to the Los Angeles Clippers, and I think I woke up at 4 or 4:30, and I had left ESPN on the TV, and I was like, oh, well, that happened. Tell me what your text message line was doing Friday night into Saturday morning.
Well, it's actually funny. I was up for the news.
Wow.
I was actually talking with some of our executives during that time because there was the earthquake situation that was going on.
Right.
So I was trying to get some more information. I'm going out to Summer League here soon, and I had heard of some things that were going on, so I was just shooting some messages, reading up on some things. And then I saw some news kind of coming through in my text chain before it hit social media that Kawhi had made a decision. And that this decision, we've talked throughout the year about free agency. It's just kind of been drilled home in all NBA basketball fans, and it feels like, you know, so much was made of this summer going into it. And I knew Kawhi was going to take his time, but I knew the Clippers were always in the mix. So I wasn't all that surprised, but I was surprised once I heard the Paul George news and that it was sort of a deal breaker if they weren't going to be able to make a trade and add another superstar. But then when the news broke and everything that followed, right, with things with Paul George and obviously Russell Westbrook now, there's just been so much going on in the NBA, and it's not just what's going on with the Clippers, right? I mean, the drama with the Lakers, and then what's Toronto do, and everything's kind of been put on hold to see what happens with Kawhi. But it's just been a monumental summer in free agency across the board for the NBA.
Well, one of the things, Jarrett, I was taught early in my broadcast career was it's better to be right than be first. There are a lot of national media people who are closely connected with NBA players, coaches, executives, who wanted to run to the front of the parade and put out the flag, Kawhi is going to the Lakers, guarantee it. Kawhi is staying with the Raptors. He's hanging out with Drake. It's between the Raptors and the Lakers, and that's it, nobody else. And nobody wanted to wait for it. And my thought process, and look, I don't have any connections to the NBA. I know guys who played in the NBA. You're connected to the NBA. But everybody just wanted to be first, and nobody wanted to take their time. And the thing I thought about was, Kawhi Leonard really doesn't care what anybody else thinks. And you know what? He's not telling anybody else what he thinks. He's going to do what he does, and he's going to do it whenever he damn well pleases. And we're all just going to have to wait. I don't know why everybody was in a hurry to make the announcement before and be wrong before he actually made a decision.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's a learning experience, because you're absolutely right, Brad. I mean, I think there is this notion, especially with the NBA and the coverage of the NBA, right? I mean, from a social media perspective, the NBA is as covered as any sports league, and especially in July and the free agency period with the finals going right into the draft, going right into free agency, it's great for the league and how the calendar year breaks out for the NBA. And I do think that the media coverage is great for the league. I was listening to Andre Iguodala and J.J. Redick talk about this. It has reached a point, though, where there's so many people trying to be a Woj bomb, right? They're trying to break news. And the reality is, I communicate with media members myself, and sometimes I don't feel all that comfortable with it because, look, I am not a GM. I'm not an assistant GM. I am a part of free agency meetings during the year, but my job is to be on the scouting side, on the college side. And there's the analytical team, and then it's all about ownership and the GM and the head coach and their recruitment in free agency and what they want to do as it relates to acquiring talent with the pro personnel staff. But these media members, And yes, there is a notion that teams have to work with the media, right? The NBA wants that to happen. There's certain things that are mandated by the NBA that the media and the teams have to communicate, whether it be, you know, pre-game interviews, post-game interviews. I think the players are wanting it to be where media members cannot be in the locker room before games, that it's just reached a point where it's too much. It's too much media. There's so many people that are trying to get in on players making decisions. And yes, it is great for the NBA because one player can change your franchise. There's only five players that play on the court on a team. There's a roster of 15 guys. It's not like the NFL. It's not like Major League Baseball. And that is a benefit to the NBA. But there has reached this moment where even players see it, executives see it. And I do think the NBA does a great job with the media. They want the media to be a part of the sport. But there just comes a point, as you just touched on, nobody knew what Kawhi Leonard was going to do. Nobody knew what Kevin Durant was going to do. There were a lot of people that knew what Kyrie was going to do. He made that somewhat public. But the reality is the NBA free agency, everybody wanted to talk about this during the season. And I kept telling people, nobody is going to make a decision until after the playoffs. Because the playoffs are a huge part of a player making a decision in free agency. So all these people, even before free agency started, were trying to make these points on Twitter or say that they had an inside source that said Kawhi or KD were going to do this. And nobody knew anything. And so the point is valid, right? Like, just because you're first doesn't mean you're right. And I think that's something that I respect about Adrian Wojnarowski is that he is so plugged in. He's got so many sources, but he never runs with anything until it's concrete, set in stone. He's got three sources. And I do speak with different media members, and sometimes I just tell them, look, I am not in a position to say anything. I can't tell you what you're wanting. I know you're wanting information because you want to be first, but I'm not just going to tell you information to tell you information. And oh, by the way, teams I know of can use the media in a way that's negative, where they're just feeding information to put something out there to maybe try to make a dialogue or a conversation go in their direction and where the team is wanting to go ultimately.
Yeah, and I think Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, has talked about kind of the unhealthy saturation of whether it's media or social media, Twitter, Facebook, and the players get so wrapped up in it that sometimes you have to step back and just get away from it for a little while. So we get this, we get the Kawhi Leonard news, and I was thinking about this yesterday. I was kind of thinking out loud. Okay, so now we know where the major pieces are. We know KD and Kyrie are with the Nets. We know Kawhi and Paul George are with the Clippers, and the Lakers have LeBron and AD, but they missed out. They saved money to try to wait for Kawhi, and that didn't work out. And I'm thinking about, okay, so who's the favorite coming in now? With the Clippers, Kawhi's going to be good to go to start, but Paul George may miss a few weeks because he has a shoulder injury. The Lakers have LeBron and AD, but they didn't get the third piece that they wanted. The Nets have KD and Kyrie, but KD is out for the year. The Warriors have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, but Klay could be out for the year, but they still have Draymond Green. I really don't know who the favorite should be right now just because there's so many health question marks with these superstars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's good for the league, ultimately. I think the decision by Kawhi, I mean, again, his decision and, you know, so much made about him flying to Toronto and everybody thought, well, he's flying to Toronto. Obviously, he's going to re-sign. Why would he fly to Toronto? And he did, and he still picked the Clippers. And it was a thorough, you know, free agency moment for Kawhi where he wanted to go get feedback and see what teams were out there and what teams were doing and what teams were going to build around him. And I think it's good for the league because I don't think there's really one team that you can say they're the clear-cut favorite. And if you go back to last year, I mean, think about it when the Warriors signed Boogie Cousins, right?
Yes.
It's like, well, why are we even going to play the season?
Right.
Warriors going to walk away with this. And the point is so much can happen in an NBA season and in the playoffs. And you just don't know what's going to happen. And then Kawhi ends up in the trade, and he goes to Toronto and wins the championship. And I do think there's some comments of, hey, can Kawhi go to the Clippers and win a championship with another organization the very next year? And then, obviously, Boogie Cousins goes to the Lakers, and he gets reunited with Anthony Davis. The Lakers re-sign Rajon Rondo. I think that's a good pickup for them to re-sign Rajon. And so there is some good teams that are going to be solid. And I think with the Brooklyn Nets, when you look at their roster and you look at their team, I mean, they got a solid group. And Kenny Atkinson is a great coach. And, yeah, they're not going to have Durant, but you know, how is Kyrie fit in there? How is he going to perform this year? How is he going to make the comeback after what took place in Boston? there's so many storylines now across multiple teams. And I still think the Utah Jazz, the Denver Nuggets, those two teams have done really well over the last couple of years in the draft and in free agency. So I wouldn't sleep on those two teams either. And the West is still pretty much loaded across the board. And I still think when you look at the East, you still got Milwaukee, you still got Philadelphia that made some really good moves, and they're still two dominant teams. And then, you know, what do the Celtics do with Kemba? There's so many storylines, and I think that benefits the league across the board from a parity standpoint, and that there's multiple teams that are going to be able to compete, and who's going to be left standing in June next year.
We're speaking with Jarrett Sutton, Missouri basketball star, pride of Oak Park High School, NBA scout. We're talking about all the huge news that's gone on over the last few days in the NBA. Jarrett, final thing on Kawhi, and I said this yesterday to Chris, the thing I'm most happy about is when things work out for people from Kansas City, you and everybody else. And so the bottom line takeaway for me as a kid, as someone who roots for the hometown kids, is Landry Shamet, Park Hill High School, Wichita State, drafted by the 76ers last year, was having a pretty good rookie season, then traded to the Clippers midway through. And the first thing I saw after the Kawhi trade on ESPN is they put up a graphic of the starting five for the Clippers. And there's Landry Shamet from Kansas City and Park Hill High School going to be on the floor with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And I'm so happy for him.
So happy for him. You know, Landry is a guy that, you know, Park Hill High School, but played for the Kansas City Pacers, which was the same AU program that I came from. And I've seen Landry since he was in sixth, seventh grade. And I remember watching him when he was in middle school and high school, and I thought, this kid is going to be so good and so talented. It's probably going to be one of the better players to come out of the city if everything goes according to plan for him, if he can stay healthy, all those factors. But he's just keeps getting better and better, and he's niched himself. He's always been a lethal shooter, but he's such an unselfish kid. And I don't want to call him a kid anymore, right? He's an NBA player now, and he's going to be starting for a great NBA.
Based on my age, Jarrett, I'm going to call him a kid for the rest of his life.
He's younger than me, so I say kid. But, you know, I'm happy for him, and I think if you look at how he handled last year as a rookie, you know, a guy that was a late first-round selection, there was a lot of talk, was he a first-round pick, was he not? Should he have stayed at Wichita State? I know he's the first player that left Greg Marshall's program as an underclassman. And think about a guy that set a single-game record for most threes hit in a game for two different organizations, right? Philadelphia
right.
76ers and the Clippers. And I do think at the time Philly made a trade that was good in getting Tobias Harris. They wanted to get another solidified player with Jimmy Butler, obviously with Ben and then with Joel. But, man, Landry took that opportunity in L.A. with Doc Rivers. And there's that connection with J.J. Redick. And J.J. Redick played for the Clippers with Doc.
Yep.
And J.J. was somewhat Landry's mentor. And so for Landry to just kind of have a rookie season where he jumped on the scene so quick, and everybody knows about him now. He's going to get some time with USA Basketball coming up, which I think will be great for him. He deserves that. It's great recognition for him. But he's going to play a lethal role for that Clippers team. And I think he'll learn a lot even more playing with a superstar in Kawhi. They still got great players around in Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, obviously. And they'll get the team that's dangerous, honestly. And then, obviously, with Paul, who is a solidified, you know, 3-and-D type of weapon, he's going to have so many opportunities to make a name for himself shooting the basketball. That's going to be his bread and butter. And then also being able to handle the ball more, playing more at the point. The future's so bright for Landry. I couldn't be prouder for him.
Yeah, I am happy for him. We're speaking with Jarrett Sutton here, NBA scout, Mizzou Tiger, Oak Park Northman. Final player question, then I'm going to ask you about the Lakers and Knicks real quick to wrap it up. Final player question, Russell Westbrook. The story came out this morning that he and his agent have been speaking with the Oklahoma City GM, Stan Presti, about options and what they're going to do in the future, because now, you know, James Harden left years ago and now Paul George is gone. They still have Steven Adams, but it doesn't look very bright for the Thunder. And they're even talking about the possibility of a trade. Where would Russell Westbrook fit in best? And do you buy into this notion that guys don't get along with him, or he doesn't get along with his teammates?
I think it's tough. I mean, first of all, the NBA is a business, right? And when free agency hits, it's an opportunity for players to explore options, right? It's an opportunity for them to think about where they want them and their family to live, or where it makes sense from a basketball standpoint, where they can go be successful and go win a championship. And I do think there's something to be said about, you know, each player's different in what they want, but it's also the stage of their career and where they're at in their career and what makes most sense for them to continue their career, right? And it's Andre Iguodala said this the other day, and I have so much respect for Andre, but he talked about how, you know, when you get to be a veteran player and say you've won a championship, which he has, and he was a Finals MVP, you start trying to ask yourself, you know, what else is out there for me? How do I keep growing? How do I keep improving? These guys are competitors. And I think with Paul George, you know, the fact that him and Kawhi are friends, and the fact that Kawhi, I think it's a respect factor, right? And I think for Paul George, he thought, well, if it's the right move, and obviously team executives are a part of this to try to make this happen, but it's almost like if a player says, look, I want to play with this player, it all changed when LeBron went to Miami, right?
Right.
This is where everything changed for
yep.
the league. And I think when you look at it from Russell's standpoint, he's a fearless guy. I love his mentality. He's a reckless, abandoned type of player. He plays with great fire and competitiveness. I love that about him. But that, you know, I think there's some players that don't play that certain way. And I don't think it's a knock on Russ. I don't. Russ is a guy that's won a lot of games. He's put up incredible numbers in his career.
Right.
And I think this Thunder situation, you look back with Harden and Ibaka and Durant, they have had so many incredible players come through that program. And I think it started with Durant leaving. And I don't think it's necessarily a Russell Westbrook thing. It could be a part of that. I do think it's just the nature of the business and players that – look, Paul George re-signed in Oklahoma City. He could have gone to L.A. at that point. He didn't. I think that's a sign that you can play with Russell Westbrook. I just think it's more so every season, every year is different. Every free agency period is different. And you never know what team is going to get in the mix on a player and what trade's going to be there. And when an executive get the opportunity to acquire 4 first-round picks, or get the ability
right.
to acquire assets. We're seeing that so much, and that's how you're going to have to rebuild a team. And in Oklahoma City, a small market, acquiring assets, freeing up cap space, having flexibility, that's what teams are going to want to do. And I think when Russ knows, look, I don't have anybody around me, now I want to go, Oklahoma City's going to have to look at themselves and think, where are we? Where's the future for us?
Yep.
We are not the team we were. And it's a business, and it's tough for the player side and the team side.
Well, two organizations that also have to ask themselves some questions, one more so than the other. The Lakers held out saving money for Kawhi. That didn't happen, so they had to sign secondary and tertiary players. I still think they're going to be a very good basketball team. But the New York Knicks, my God, Jarrett, they held out everything. They were convinced they were going to get Kevin Durant and get a running mate for him, too. They whiffed on everybody, and it's a clear sign that their owner, James Dolan, is just poison. Nobody wants to play for that organization. Don't give me the Mike Francesa says, Madison Square Garden, everybody wants to play there. That's gone, Jarrett. That veneer of the greatness of Madison Square Garden and the Knicks being a classic, that's gone until James Dolan sells the team, if he ever does.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misconceptions that go into that. I think it's Knicks are an example of that, but I think you also have to look at so much is made of players. Well, they want to go to L.A., right? They want to be in L.A. They want to be in L.A. They want to play with LeBron. It's not necessarily the case, and I think the same thing can be said, touching on my last point about having flexibility, freeing up cap space, acquiring assets, so important, right, in building a team. But just because you have cap space doesn't mean a player is just going to go – you know, take a max deal with you just for the money. And I think when the rule was put into place where you could get the supermax, it was sort of this notion that, well, it's going to keep players in their own markets because it's a lot of money, it's going to keep them there. And we've seen that's not the case. Again, it touches on my point with LeBron leaving. There's money to be had in the NBA. The NBA is operating at a high level, and players are going to go where it makes most sense to win. And to win, you have to have the right foundation and the right culture and the right locker room and the right young pieces. I mean, look at the Brooklyn Nets and the LA Clippers, two teams that live somewhat in the shadow of the Lakers and the Knicks. And they hit on superstar talent, but they did it because there was a rebuild. Give the LA Clippers so much credit, right? They got rid of Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. They tried as hard as they could to go win a championship with them. It didn't work out. That's okay. They rebuild that roster the right way. They go with some young pieces, some young talent. And they start to show, look, we are still a attractionable landing spot for a free agent. But it doesn't mean you're just going to get a superstar. And now, as we know, Kawhi said, look, I'll play in L.A. I will play with the Clippers. I'm a supporter with Doc. We have good chemistry. We get along well. We have a plan. There is a plan moving forward of where we want to see this team 3-4 years down the road. But it also touches on, I got to get another superstar. We need to have this happen for me to go to your market. Clippers might not have made that trade happen, and then they miss out on Kawhi. And then they're asking questions of where do they go next. So much is made of free agency and making sure that you are in a place to acquire talent. Every free agency period is different. Next year, there's probably not going to be a lot of free agents that are as there were this year. And I think it does touch on that. Ownership is important, but having the right foundation, the right culture, the right pieces, the right coach, the right front office, that is so important in a free agency decision. It's not just because it's New York or Madison Square Garden. You've got to be at a place where it makes sense and there is a plan in place and there are bona fide reasons to go to that market and the strengths to go to that market.
All right, Jarrett, I'm out of time for this segment, but I will tell you this. You're connected since you're a Mizzou guy. I'm a UMKC guy, and UMKC has changed their logo, and they're going to go by Kansas City now. They're not going to be going by UMKC because nobody in New York or Texas or Utah knows what UMKC means. They're going to Kansas. They're going the Kansas City Ruse or the KC Ruse. I want to see you at some point wearing a KC Ruse T-shirt around town.
Absolutely. I think it's great, too. I'm really excited. I mean, Brandon Martin's done a great job. I thought it was the right decision.
Yep.
You know, I think Coach Donlin's going to do a great job, too, at UMKC. I'm really excited. So, hey, you don't have to, you know, press me on that. I'll be happy to wear some Ruse here.
Hey, Jarrett, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I appreciate your time so much.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. That is Jarrett Sutton, NBA scout, Mizzou Tiger, Oak Park Northman, SEC Network analyst. He's dialed into the NBA. Because he works for the NBA. So we got a Kansas City perspective on all the moves going on in the crazy world of the association.
I just wish, I mean, it's going to take a while. I don't know if Kansas City will ever get an NBA team, but and not every team makes huge splashes in free agency.
Right.
And it's usually the bigger. But still, it would be fun to be kind of
be part of it,
interlocked in that madness, you know, as a fan, especially if you're baseball team is really bad.
right. The NBA
even an NHL team, I'll take either. Like, just give me some other team to give me some solace from what is going on in the summer of until the Royals get good again, whenever that may be.
A little something. I'd love the NBA to come back. I don't think it will, but that's okay. We'll watch from afar. It's 24/7, 365 business on the NBA in terms of news and things. We'll take a quick timeout. We have one more half hour to go before we hit baseball tonight at 11:30. Coming up next, we'll have Bullig Bites, where Chris Bullig will pick out the sound bites of the week. They could be funny, could be weird, could be wild. Maybe we'll have Charles Barkley. Maybe we won't. We don't know. So we'll do that. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bullig is running the show. And you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Just a couple of minutes here in hour number two, and then we will hit the 11 o'clock hour with Bullig Bites, the best sound bites from the world of sports this week. And then we'll have baseball tonight at 11:30, getting you ready for Royals and Nationals. Update from the Women's World Cup in Paris, the United States and the Netherlands, scoreless at halftime. And as Chris remarked during the break here, and I agree, how did the U.S. not score 3 or 4 goals in that half? I mean, those were rocket shots that the U.S. players were putting on. Julie Ertz had one that was just smashed.
And they were, some of them were extremely close to goal.
Yes. Hit the post, I think, once,
maybe
twice.
Yeah. One, like, hit off the goalie's body.
Yes.
And she didn't even use a hand. It was her own body.
Right. So the U.S. women should be leading, but they're not. It's scoreless at the half. We'll keep you updated throughout the show and even into baseball tonight, because that's how much we care. We'll take a quick timeout and then back for our final 30 minutes before we hit baseball tonight. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Chris Bullig is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. We're going to take you up until 11:30, and then we will magically switch out the studio and have baseball tonight.
Beautiful. Just like a magician.
Just like a magician. A couple of quick notes real quick, and we'll get to Bohlig Bites. Royals losers yesterday, 6-0 to Max Scherzer and the Nationals. Scherzer with 11 strikeouts, which is pretty much what he does. Over back closer to the hometown, Sporting KC home game last night. A huge 1-0 win over Chicago. Not huge in terms of a great matchup, but huge in terms of Sporting KC needed 3 points. They got their goal, Johan Quaze, 14th minute, and as Peter Vermes said, we went back to our old school game. We got our goal, and we locked it down. Sporting got the win. United States women in the World Cup Finals, scoreless at halftime with the Netherlands. The men will play tonight for the Gold Cup Finals, if I can talk. Playing against Mexico at 8 o'clock. All right, Chris, let's hit it.
All right, Brad. Well, as you well may know, great week. Even though we say it's a dead period in sports, there's always things going on, especially the NBA free agency, Women's World Cup, a lot of different things going on. We'll start with NBA free agency. And do you know who Steve Aoki is? He's a DJ. Very famous, well-known DJ. If you look him up, he's very famous.
If you could guess, I'm not dialed into the DJ community.
Yeah, but anyways, he's a very well-known figure in pop culture and music and whatnot. This was his pitch to Kawhi to come to Los Angeles.
Kawhi, you got to come to Lakers. You, LeBron, AD, LA would go insane. And not only would I give you free pizza Aoki for life, but I will throw the biggest pizza party that LA has ever seen right in front of the Staples Center. Let's break the Guinness Book of World Records on this one in your honor. Let's do it. Kawhi, come home to LA. Come to Lakers.
Well, he's coming back to LA.
Right.
But unfortunately, Steve, he will not be joining the Los Angeles Lakers, as we found out Saturday night. But a free pizza party? How could you not pass that up? Free pizza party, biggest pizza party ever in front of Los Angeles, in front of the Staples Center. I guess Steve Aoki is going to have to become a Clippers fan now, like most celebrities do when a player kind of is in the town but is not on the team. You know, if there's like a two-team kind of thing, whether it be, you know, with the Mets and the Yankees or, you know, the Clippers, the Lakers. The Clippers have always been the little brother, but now I think you're going to start seeing some allegiance shift with, you know, all the stars going to Lakers games in the past, but now it's probably going to be the Clippers.
Well, Jack Nicholson, I guarantee, is not going to a Clippers game.
Oh, he is.
Unless the Lakers are playing in that game. But yeah, I could see all the Kardashians becoming Clippers fans all of a sudden. Didn't one of them used to date Lamar Odom when he played for the Lakers?
Yes. Lamar has had his troubles of his own, but yes, he was married to a Kardashian. I think if you marry a Kardashian, it's an omen of some sort.
It's not good. One of them was married to...
One of them dated Reggie Bush.
And one of them was married to Chris Humphries, right?
Chris Humphries, and look what happened to his career after that.
It's not gone well.
No, not gone well at all. So.
By the way, does this Aoki, the DJ, is he known for pizza too? Is that right?
I guess he has a place in L.A. called Pizza Aoki. He was trying to break Guinness World Records, Brad.
Were I in demand enough and someone lobbied me to move cities...
For a pizza party.
For a pizza party, I'm down.
Free pizza
Sign
for life,
up.
Too.
Sign
Free
me up.
Free pizza for
I'm
life.
Done. It Sign
depends.
Me up.
But would you have to have a taste test first? I would be like,
oh,
I will
probably,
do it,
yeah.
But I want a sample, and that's how I would go about with that.
Absolutely.
Sticking on the food train here, as we all know, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest.
Yes.
First of all, Brad, do you think that competitive eaters are athletes?
No.
Okay.
What do you think of the Nathan's interesting, hot dog? It's an interesting
are
activity.
Are you disgusted by the Nathan's hot dog eating
contest?
I'll
tell you this. I saw it. It was on the TV on the 4th of July. I couldn't watch it, though, because it made me feel sick. But I understand why people are fascinated by it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I'm not like Peter King, who's telling ESPN they're horrible for doing a 30 for 30 documentary on this.
Have you had a Nathan's hot dog? Have you been
yes.
to New York and had a Nathan's
no,
hot dog?
No, I have not had one in New York, but I have had.
I've been to Coney Island. I've had a Nathan's hot dog. It's all
I've been
right.
to Manhattan. I've
it's
been
fine.
I've been to Manhattan. I've been to the Bronx. I've been to Queens, but I've not been to Coney Island.
All right, well, here is one, as you pre-mentioned, Joey Chestnut had reacted to what Peter King had to say about that ESPN documentary.
It was a great documentary. It told the story. It followed Kobayashi, his rise, and our rivalry, and then his departure from the Major League.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, I don't know if you're familiar with Peter King. He's a sports writer for NBC. He actually ripped the documentary last night on ESPN, specifically saying that ESPN's done some really great documentaries and journalism. It's a shame that at least a fifth of children in America go to bed hungry nightly. Well, while ESPN's highlighting gluttony, treating someone who overeats excessively as a competitive athlete, it's truly disgusting. So my first question is, what are your thoughts? And secondly, do you consider yourself an athlete?
Oh, I'm an athlete, but I think Peter King, he's just, he's kind of narrow-minded. He's picking low-hanging fruit. It's easy to criticize something, and I think he could easily criticize NASCAR or for greenhouse gas emissions. And it's just kind of absurd that the amount of food we're eating is very, very small. Mm-hmm. And most of the contests we donate are involved with donations to food banks. And he's just kind of narrow-minded.
So, Joey Chestnut, he's got a crusade against NASCAR now. But I think he makes good points. I mean, I know you said he's you don't think he's an athlete, which is completely fine. Like,
right.
I think a lot of people wouldn't consider a competitive eater an athlete per
right.
se.
There's no problem. I mean, if he wants to call himself an athlete, fine.
I think Peter King went a little over the top,
right?
Saying with his comments. I mean, as he said, NASCAR is just racing around a track using a ton of gasoline, which he made a good point about. And
well, throw in all the smaller tracks around the country too that
yeah.
Scott Traylor and Kirk Elliott talk about on the Racing Boys.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know how I necessarily why Peter King felt like he needed to be on his high horse call out.
He's one of those. He wants to be the no fun police.
No fun police.
Let me find something to be outraged about today. Oh, the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. I'll choose that. Look, I think it's kind of gross, but the world's hunger problems are not solved by ending the Nathan's hot dog eating
contest.
And
as you said, they donate tons of these
yes.
competitions will donate a lot of food to food banks and
money,
whatnot.
Yes.
I think the first time I saw competitive eating, I was a young child, and it was a pasta eating contest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was with Kobayashi.
Oh, boy.
And, oh, my Lord, I was like, how is he swallowing all of this
mm-hmm.
pasta? He's not even breathing. He's just eating continuously the pasta. And me and my dad were watching it, and we were like, wow, this is crazy.
To tie NASCAR and the hot dog eating contest together, when NASCAR first came to Kansas City, I was asking dumb questions, and I said, what happens if you have to sneeze when you're going around a corner at 190 miles an hour? Said, so you just do it. The one thing I want to know about competitive eaters is, you know, what's the bathroom situation like, you know, a few hours later?
I posed this on Twitter. I was like, how has Tums or Pepto-Bismol not gotten on a sponsorship opportunity? Because instead of putting Gatorade, like, in the post-game presser, they could just put Tums
right.
and Pepto-Bismol
well,
on the stand.
I'm guessing Nathan's would not want the implication that their products make your stomach hurt, though
you ate 71. That. It's not even that. It's just the amount that you've
right,
eaten.
Right.
That's the point.
71 hot dogs.
Like, when I overeat sometimes, I'm like, oh, man. I need a few Tums.
Right, right. We've all been there.
All right, we move on. Women's World Cup.
Okay.
Celebrations have been it's been a talking point, let's
yes.
say. And this is what Megan Rapinoe had to say about all of those people.
Ooh, I think I might have been upstaged. That was next level. That was pretty sharp by Alex. Maybe we'll have to do it at the same time, and we'll duke it out. That was pretty sharp, though.
Sorry to interrupt, but there's been some criticism in the British media over the whole teacup celebration. What do you say to that? What do you say to people who say, you're not celebrating the right way, we find this offensive, we find you disrespectful? I mean, what's your comeback to that?
Wah, wah, wah. I mean, it's like, we're at the World Cup. What do you want us to do? This is the biggest stage, the biggest moment. I don't think anyone truly believes that we disrespect the game or disrespect our opponents. We have the utmost respect for England and every team that we faced and every team that we will face forever and ever. That's just part of the DNA of the squad. And with that said, we work hard, we like to play hard, and we like to have fun and enjoy ourselves, and these are the absolute biggest moments to do that.
There it is. Wow, wow, wow. I love that response, because all those people out there, the no, as you said before, the no fun police, yeah, can eat it.
Yeah.
Because I think it's great. I the celebrate, like, you see men's soccer, and their celebrations are
pretty elaborate.
Emphatic.
Yeah.
So that is awesome. I love when people throw shade, especially at a rival or something in a sport. That makes it interesting. It makes it fun. It's theater. It's entertainment. That's right. What sports is. It's supposed to make you, you know, intrigued and encapsulated by what is happening on the field and the storylines and whatnot. It makes it fun.
Yeah. The no fun police can go run up an alley and holler fish, whatever you want to do to make yourselves feel good. You know what? I'm thinking of a t-shirt opportunity here, like an outline of Alex Morgan sipping tea.
Oh yeah,
with a red, white, and blue motif.
Oh
yeah, I'm down for that.
All right, Brad, get on that. Let's talk to the station about that.
If we can get Smug Dingus or Conrad McGorkin or Dad Bod Tees or Charlie Hustle, somebody get on that Alex Morgan silhouette sipping a cup of tea in red, white, and blue. I'm down. I'll sell it. I'll come down there and sell them.
All right, we move on. NBA free agency, as we've talked about, is huge. We heard from Steve Aoki earlier talking about Kawhi, his pitch. But here is Rick Barry talking about KD's decision, and he's a little confused about it.
For whatever reason, he's decided to move on. My biggest thing is I'm hoping someday he's going to come forward and actually explain why it is he made the decision to leave. Because personally, I can't figure out what reasons would justify wanting to leave the situation that he's in. It's such an incredible opportunity to be on one of the greatest teams in the history of your sport. You have great teammates who can help you to achieve the goal of winning more championships and not have to carry the whole load yourself, be in a new arena that's going to be fantastic with great fans. So it's hard for me to conceive of why he wanted to leave, but hey, it's his life. He's entitled to do it. I'm grateful that he was there and appreciate him having been there and being a part of the Warriors legacy. And I wish him all the best, but I will root against him when he plays against the Warriors and when he comes back from his injury.
There he is. Rick Barry wants an answer. He wants Kevin Durant to
get
call
off my
him.
Lawn.
And I don't know if it was more of a, I think it's just Rick Barry being a homer, because I think he does respect Kevin's decision.
Absolutely.
And I think he's a very progressive-minded person from when he played in the league to now and how he thinks about the game. But I think it's just coming from a homer perspective and feeling like he wants an answer of why he didn't come back. But I don't know. I thought it was just kind of interesting, because I think he makes, valid, like, this is the best team that was ever assembled, possibly, in the NBA.
Right.
And Kevin Durant, I think for Kevin, it's also about being able to, he never felt like that was his, it was his team.
Right.
And I think he wants to win with a team where it feels like it's his team and his squad, and people recognize that.
Isn't KD from Washington, D.C.?
He's from Washington, D.C., but he said he wouldn't take a meeting with the Wizards.
No.
Ever.
God, why would you?
Ever.
No, I wouldn't either.
But
he's closer to home. He's played his whole career in the West. Started in Seattle before they moved to Oklahoma City. Then he went to Golden State. So it's a chance to go back home a little bit. And look, this Warriors run, it doesn't have more than about 5 more years, maybe, because their players are getting older.
Yep.
They're getting beat up. Steph Curry's played a ton of games. Klay Thompson's played a ton of games. He's been hurt. Draymond Green has played a ton of games. Andre Iguodala is gone. This team is coming apart. And if you're looking to build something for the next generation, the Nets are a good young team.
Absolutely.
And KD can have a huge impact.
As you know, we heard from Charles Barkley last week about reacting to LeVar Ball's bad comments on national television on ESPN. But here is, what did you think? LeVar had a rebuttal, and this is he had to say back to one Charles Barkley.
Here's what I say. I don't even pertain to Charles because he's so jealous of me. He wanted to be me so bad. He never had a father. He wished I was his father.
Wow.
That's why he's so animate towards me. But I don't even get into that because the only way he can get his 200 likes, he got to say something bad about me. But it's okay. He's just got a little problem right now. He's an old guy. He don't know where he's going right now, so it's okay. But, hey, I ain't going to mess with Charles because he lost in his mind right now, and it's okay. When you get old, sometimes that happens. But I know he's jealous. He wants everything I got. People don't come up to him. Kids don't believe in him. Nothing. He talking about a village. Tell him I live in the city. He still live in the village? He talking about a village?
Ah, man. The burn. Burn
sick,
from LeVar.
Sick burn from LeVar Ball.
LeVar Ball just bringing the burn.
That was a reference to Barkley saying last week that if there's a village missing an idiot, just look for LeVar Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. LeVar Ball. Yeah. Charles Barkley is jealous of LeVar Ball. Yeah.
Yeah. That...
I'm buying. Look, LeVar Ball has become the worst wrestling villain of all time because wrestling villains, some people actually like them and they provide entertainment value. LeVar Ball provides nothing.
What? Yeah.
Nothing.
I don't know why people still talk to him.
I don't know why
it's
people...
because people will click on it. People will watch it. It's all about
bait.
The clicks.
Yep.
All right. So in baseball last night, Phillies, we were talking about Phillies Mets, and Jake Arrieta hit Todd Frazier, and Todd Frazier was not very pleased about it. It was a changeup, so it wasn't like it was, I don't think it was meant, but Todd Frazier thought it was. But here's what Jake Arrieta had to say in the post-game presser. It's a very short clip, but it's a very telling thing about the intensity of one Jake Arrieta.
You know, if Frazier's not happy about it, he can come see me, and I'll put a dent in his skull.
There we go. Love it. Short and sweet. Come at me, Todd. If you have words for me, come at me. Because that is one thing. I think what happened was Frazier was talking to the ump, but wasn't really confronting Arrieta and wasn't coming at him. But I thought that was pretty crazy. I thought that was pretty funny.
I'll put a dent in his head.
Yes.
Is that saying he's going to throw at his head next time?
What? Stay tuned. They're in the same division, so. But next time Todd Frazier and Jake Arrieta face off, that's going to be some fireworks, hopefully.
By the way, I will be giving you an update on the World Cup in just a minute. Something may or may not be happening. I know Alex Morgan was kicked almost in the head. So I'll give you an update. I can't tell you live. I can't talk about it live. I'll give you an update in a little bit.
We'll do another short one since that there might be something happening.
Yes.
But here is Mark Wahlberg talking about working out with Baker Mayfield and what he thinks about Baker.
Oh, man, Baker's my buddy. He's the heir to the throne, to Tom Brady.
Heir to the throne. So, yes, heir to the throne, that might be a strong statement there. But Mark Wahlberg going out of his way to say that, one, Baker Mayfield will be the next heir to the throne and will be coming to New England after Tom Brady retires and he's done with his rookie contract, even though the Browns are going to pay him a lot of money at some point.
Heir to the throne of Tom Brady? Baker
Heir
Mayfield?
To the throne.
May want to throw up some Patrick Mahomes numbers first.
Yes.
I think Baker Mayfield is going to be a fine quarterback, but... Okay, I don't know why Baker Mayfield and Mark Wahlberg are working out together, but...
Because the Wahlbergs.
That's right.
The Wahlburgers, whatever their show is. Don't they have a show on A&D they called the Wahlburgers?
Yeah, there's a restaurant here in town, which I'm never going to go to because it's overpriced and whatever.
Is there a Wahlberg restaurant here?
No. I think it's in Overland Park.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay. Update from the World Cup. Women's World Cup.
World Cup update.
Alex Morgan was kicked in the goal box area. Almost in the head. It was kind of in the shoulder. The referee ruled it was a clear denial of a goal-scoring situation. Gave her a yellow card. Awarded the USA a penalty kick. And Megan Rapinoe blasted it home. USA up 1-0.
Bang, Brad. Here we go.
There we go.
You knew it was coming
with
all the chances they had in the first half. It was just a matter of time. There we go.
Yeah.
Goal for the United States.
The Netherlands players have been absolutely beating on the USA players with
physical
headshots. Becky Sauerbrunn walked off the field a few minutes ago, just covered in blood.
It's a bloodbath in there.
It's on.
It is on.
USA up 1-0, 62-41.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right. We'll end it today here for Bullock Bites with Jimmy Walker, TV legend.
Oh,
good
yeah.
times.
Dynamite.
Oh,
loved.
Yes.
Loved that show.
Loved it. And this is what he has to say about today's NBA players.
If I was there, I would be out shooting right now. Yeah. I would be practicing now. If I'm 5 years old, I'm shooting right now, practicing. Forget about school. Forget about that stuff.
Forget about acting.
Forget about acting. Start shooting.
You wanted to be a basketball player.
I did want to be a basketball player, but I wasn't that good. I played with Tiny Archibald, who's a Hall of Famer, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a whole nother story. But I think now, if you're an NBA player, man, the thing that upsets me the most about NBA players is they're so upset. They're so angry. Kyrie Irving is making $31 million a year. Kevin Durant, what are you upset about? I'm happy if I'm making that kind of money. But they always are complaining. They don't understand what it's like to be in real life.
Yeah.
Real life is getting your own bags off the carousel, no charters, no limos waiting for you, even though we had a little car service here. But that's what real life. NBA players were happy to be there. And they used to fly regular planes. I flew with the 76ers on a plane one time.
Yeah.
The whole team was on there. So there's a whole different story.
That's a little old man take. Back in my day, they used to fly commercial.
J.J. Walker.
I'd say Jimmy Walker talking about how they shouldn't, not having, the life of luxury with taking limousines, even though he was taking a car service.
Yeah, we got a car service here. He played, J.J. Walker played basketball with Nate Tiny Archibald.
Oh, yeah. Kansas City connection right
Kansas
there.
City Kings legend.
Yes.
Before
That's
he left.
Crazy.
I would love to have been there to watch J.J. Walker, Jimmy Walker, play basketball with Nate Tiny Archibald. That literally just blew my mind.
And granted, coming from a guy that has probably made a ton of money royalty-wise off of Good Times.
And he's lost a lot of money, too.
Yeah, I'm sure there has been – he's probably had – sometimes that happens. But the old man take there, he was like, I flew with the 76ers. Commercial.
Yeah,
but
he used to do
now
that back,
it's a
now
different
that,
day.
Yeah. Have you seen the Dallas Mavericks airplane?
I'm sure it's incredible.
Oh, my God. Couches, luxury chairs, because, I mean, everybody on the team's 7 feet tall.
I mean, yeah, you gotta have some leg room, especially when you're like Dirk Nowitzki and they had Tyson Chandler when they won the championship.
J.J. Walker.
Coming out with firing bullets.
I fly commercial. I got to pick up my own bags. There's no limousine.
Even though we have a
car service here. J.J. Walker for the win. That one in. Him and Charles Barkley are now tied for best riffs on Bullock Bites.
But I just think it's funny because if they're it's every like even actors now too. It's everywhere. The money has just skyrocketed completely. And of course, if someone's willing to pay you $200 million over 5 years to play a sport, you're not gonna. It's not like you're not gonna take that.
Leonardo DiCaprio has a private jet or uses a private jet all the time, and he'll fly it to give a speech about the environment.
I know.
Which
I've
find
seen that, which is
which
pretty
I
funny.
Find hilarious.
But also, Johnny Depp bought an island.
Yeah.
Like back in this was probably in the early season. He bought an island.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Life of luxury.
Yeah.
Jimmy Walker.
I'd love to fly charter, private.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. Great. I used to do that with the Royals. It was like a Midwest Airlines, I believe, Midwest Express or whatever you call it, had the nice warm chocolate chip cookies. And I mean, it wasn't like the Mavericks plane, but it was nice.
No.
I liked it.
But
you didn't have to wait at the gate. You get on it. It takes off when you get there.
Yes. Yes. That's nice. That's
you don't
nice.
Have to wait.
Don't have to wait. No delays. Unless there's weather, of course. But, no mechanical issues.
No.
So that does it for this edition of Bullock Bites. So that's what we're rolling with this week. So some good stuff.
I did. I just have one quick charter flight story from my days with the Royals. I never talk about what goes on or what went on the plane because that's the player's business. I don't get into their business. But we were on a flight once, and bad weather was coming in, and so we were trying to hurry up and get on the plane, but we had to go through a security check, and it was dragging forever and ever and ever, which normally didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then half the traveling party was on the plane and half was out, and they shut it down because there was lightning coming in.
Yeah.
And somebody said that the lady in charge of security gained her fame because she was the one who busted Carmelo Anthony with weed when he was with the Denver Nuggets.
Weed.
Can you imagine that being a big deal now?
I know, right?
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure a lot of NBA players smoke marijuana. So,
all right. Yeah. We are coming up on a timeout here. Actually, this is the end of our show, and then we're going to magically change the studio over, and we're going to have baseball tonight coming up for you. We'll talk Royals and Nationals, 12:30 first pitch. Baseball tonight is next. Thank you for listening to Sports Sunday. Thanks to our guests, Nicholas Mendola from NBCSports.com, talking all the soccer. Jared Sutton, NBA scout and a frequent guest on Sports Radio 810 WHB, talking about all the NBA action. USA leading the Netherlands 1-0. 68 minutes and 30 seconds into the match, and we will keep you updated throughout baseball tonight. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig has been running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.